Why is Mathnasium one of the world's fastest growing franchises? The answer is because the demand for after-school math help is skyrocketing, making it an exceptional financial opportunity with the power to change lives. That's also why Mathnasium is consistently recognized as the number one math-only education franchise. With over 1,100 centers worldwide, Mathnasium is the trusted brand name in math education, helping students build confidence and develop a love for math. Protected territories are available. Get your free franchise information kit at mathnasiumfranchise.com. That's mathnasiumfranchise.com. I hate doing expenses, but you know what I hate even more than that? It's all my team's expenses. Receipts from so many people and freelancer invoices and subscriptions nobody remembers. Blah. But you know what can solve that problem? It's Ramp. Ramp is a free corporate card that automates away your entire expense process. The moment your team makes a purchase, Ramp handles everything. Receipt matching, categorization, approvals, the works. And switching to Ramp is easy. The company offers a complimentary white glove onboarding service to help you migrate from your current corporate card to start using Ramp. So don't wait. Switching to Ramp is like hiring a full-time employee for just expense management. Only easier. Over 25,000 businesses trust Ramp, including Shopify and the Boys and Girls Club of America, which is why they were named number one in spend management by G2. And now, for a limited time, listeners of this show can get $250 when you join Ramp. Just go to ramp.com/solvers. Ramp.com/solvers. Ramp, that's ramp.com/solvers. Cards issued by Sutton Bank, member FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
I was having lunch at home with my wife, and I told her, oh, hey, you know, just after lunch, I'm going to be talking to Angie of Angie's List. And my wife said, wait, that's a real person? And so, of course, when I talked to Angie of Angie's List, who is a real person, that was the first thing I told her. And she said, oh, yeah, I get that all the time.
I do. And in fact, that is why our marketing team wanted to put me in the commercial so many years ago.
Huh?
Because that was the most common question. They're like, okay, you're named Angie's List. Is there actually an Angie?
It's funny because you were probably thinking, why else would it have been called Angie's List? Like, why the name Angie otherwise?
That's right. Well, we were debating names. We thought about naming it Jackie's List, and Jackie was the mother of one of our board members. So Jackie wouldn't have been at the company, but my co-founder, Bill, threw in at the last minute. He's like, well, if we're going down this path, we should just call it Angie's List. Like, she's the one that answers the phone. I mean, that story works. It's simple. It's clean.
And so it was. They called the company Angie's List. The company became very large. And then Angie of Angie's List became kind of famous. But here's the funny thing, which I certainly didn't know. Angie did not want any of this. I mean, she wanted a successful company, but she didn't want to be the face of it. She had no desire to be the name everyone knows. Angie, as you will hear her talk about, is very shy. She didn't want to be in the limelight.
And it was quite a journey for me.
But, you know, this is the funny thing about so many founders. You start this business and you want it to grow. And somewhere along the way, you discover that you personally are an incredible asset for the company. But that requires putting yourself out there. That requires becoming this character, this person that represents the brand, that people associate the brand with, that people can build a real relationship with. Because, you know, it's hard to build a relationship with a brand. It's much easier to build a relationship with a person. So how do you become that person? How do you embody that person? How do you turn that position into something that's useful and sustainable? Angie is still at the company, but the company actually has changed its name. So she is still Angie, and the company is not Angie's List anymore. The company is now just Angie as well, except that Angie the person is A-N-G-I-E as the original spelling of the company, and Angie the company is now just A-N-G-I. But she is still there, and often, but not always, takes a very forward-facing, consumer-facing role. So how did a shy Angie turn into the Angie that everyone knows? And how did she think strategically? And how did her company think strategically about how to use the human Angie to serve the corporate Angie, the entity Angie? Anyway, that is what we're talking about today on Problem Solvers, coming up after the break.
Are you looking to own a business that supports education in your community and provides you financial freedom? Well, join Huntington Learning Center. It's the top revenue-producing K-12 tutoring and test prep provider. Huntington delivers better student results than any other education franchise and 45% higher average franchise revenue than its nearest competitor. Huntington has spent nearly 50 years perfecting a proven system that helps students succeed and helps franchise owners thrive. So, why pick Huntington? Four reasons. Number one, a low startup investment. Number two, turnkey systems. Number three, dedicated support teams. And number four, multiple revenue streams to maximize your business growth. Don't have education experience? That is no problem. Huntington makes building a rewarding business simple for all. The demand for tutoring is higher than ever. And in today's growing $5 billion industry, Huntington helps you succeed. Call 1-800-653-8400 or visit huntingtonfranchise.com. That's 1-800-653-8400 or visit huntingtonfranchise.com. Don't wait. Own a business that changes students' lives and yours. Stop sitting at your desk. Truly, I know you got a lot of work to do. I got a lot of work to do, but here's what I've learned. Walking away and getting outdoors is what gives you the energy to actually get the work done. And you should have an Amazfit T-Rex 3 on your arm. What is the Amazfit T-Rex 3? It's a tough, all-weather smartwatch built for outdoor enthusiasts and fitness fans. With a battery lasting over 3 weeks, it handles extreme temperatures and is waterproof up to 328 feet. Its bright 1.5-inch screen displays GPS maps, workout stats, and sleep recovery info, while its AI voice control lets you adjust settings or send messages hand-free. I'll admit, I am not as outdoorsy as I'd like to be, but I've been wearing the T-Rex 3 on hikes and while rucking, and I love it. It's so useful. Navigation, fitness tracking, weather updates, whatever you need, give it a try. Just go to us.amazfit.com/solvers. Amazfit, by the way, is spelled A-M-A-Z-F-I-T. So again, that is us.amazfit.com/solvers.
All right, we're back. I'm talking with Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie's List, now just Angie. And we're talking about how to make you the person, the founder, the co-founder, the CEO, the person who is going to be the face of this brand, how to make you into an asset and how to be comfortable with that. And let's just get into it by starting with the story, how Angie became Angie.
Yeah, I mean, and it was quite a journey for me. So I would say that some of these decisions, I called them the inconsequential decisions at the time. Mm. So we actually started the business as Columbus Neighbors. We started in Columbus, Ohio. We patterned it after a business in Indianapolis. And so we kind of did a knockoff on their name and said we were going to be Columbus Neighbors. Mm-hmm. No one understood the business. They always got our name wrong. So a year in is when we went through this process of renaming. And at the time, we had, what, a few hundred members? I mean, there was no reason to think that this was a big decision, right?
Yeah.
This might be big and go be in Columbus or maybe two cities, so easy decision. Actually,
can I just interrupt you there? Because a friend of mine who's a consultant, Adam Bornstein, who runs a consultancy called Pen Name Consulting, said this thing to me, which I've thought about ever since for this kind of thing, which is entrepreneurs often think, what if this fails? Like we try to come up with these contingency plans, but we don't actually think, what if this succeeds? Because if this succeeds, am I built to scale? Are the decisions that I've made today the decisions that will scale if this succeeds? And obviously, you guys weren't thinking that through either because the name was not built to scale at all.
Right, right. You could argue that, it's like, oh, well, just they always need to talk to Angie or things like that. So we decided to name it that. I am an introvert. I am incredibly shy. Like, no part of me wants the limelight. I mean, before I decided to make this crazy leap into entrepreneurialism, I wanted to be an actuary. I wanted to be a business consultant. I wanted to be spreadsheet numbers was perfect for me. So totally out of my realm of kind of comfort. But, you know, but being forced and being, you know, the namesake of the business, you're forced to tell a bit of the story. You're forced into that limelight probably more than other entrepreneurs are.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. It is an important lesson of how you tell that story, because I think that entrepreneurial story is an incredibly powerful story. Because people, I tell people this, like, people like people much more than they like brands.
Yes.
You can relate to people. You can understand their story. You can understand why they did what they did. And it gives you a reason to believe. It's easier than saying, I've got the perfect tagline. I've got the perfect color for the brand. Like, there's all of those things that kind of go into building a brand, but kind of that personal connection can be something special. So figure out how you want to harness it is important. And, you know, for me, it was really about being super authentic. In order for me to be comfortable telling my story, it had to actually just be the story. There's no spin on the story. There's no extra frills. And this became increasingly important when I started as a spokesperson in the ads and things like that, and became much more well-known because, you know, the team would write content and, you know, it would be under my byline. And I was like, I have to see every piece of content that goes out under my byline, because guess what? I went through the bank drive-through the other day and the teller asked me a question about the story that appeared in the Indianapolis Star. And I couldn't answer the question. Yeah. Like, we can't do that. So I was like, you get to operate within the kind of the realms of who I am. And that's who you can take and be public, because I can't live this dual life.
Right. In which somebody comes up with a character of you that they operate, and then you are out there living a life.
Correct.
Indistinguishable from the character that had been built. So how did you, well, I use the word character here because it's top of mind, because when I talk to entrepreneurs about how to build a personal brand or how to be public, I always advise them that I think the scariest part of putting yourself out, and maybe you'll relate to this as a self-described introvert, that the scariest part of it is the feeling of exposure, that you're putting yourself out into the world. People can see all of you, and they're going to have things to say about all. Yeah. So what I say is, don't put yourself out there, because people don't want all of you. Like, you, Angie, are 100% person. I am 100% person, but your audience doesn't want that. Like, you're not showing up on this podcast as 100% person. We're not going to talk about, like, you know, other things that you're thinking about that are not related to this specific subject. We're going to talk about the 5% of you that is relevant to the audience. So I always say, like, come up with the 5% character. It's just like the 5% of you that is relevant to your audience. So I wonder if that, did you do a version of that? And, like, how did you think through what that character was or who you were presenting?
I mean, you know, you do a little bit. I mean, like, it was really about, like, hey, how are we building out the message of the brand? I mean, I think that was important to kind of, like, what you asked early, kind of what your role was to the public in being the founder of the company, right? Like, what is that message? And so for me, it's like, I'm the connector, right? Like, so we run a marketplace. We have homeowners, we have pros. Like, I'm not an expert in home improvement. The pros are the experts in home improvement, but I have the luxury of getting to talk to them all the time and getting all kinds of content and being able to give their expertise a voice, but they get the credit. I'm actually all thumbs when it comes to home improvement. I'm like, I rely on pros all the time. So it's kind of defining what world you're going to operate in and what topics are good for you to talk about, I think, is also important. You know, I really enjoy talking about entrepreneurship. I love talking about leadership. I love mentoring, kind of young person career advice. You kind of come up with the things that you're good at talking about, and those become your mini platforms that you can kind of go from one to another, in addition to kind of actually the business. But I found that, you know, your point about kind of what percentage of you you kind of put out and available to kind of be critiqued, be on display. The more public I became, I also probably became more private in my personal life.
Mm.
You know, I had young kids, and you know, I'm like, they don't need that world. I mean, when we first started doing TV advertising, like, I didn't advertise on, you know, we didn't advertise on Nickelodeon or Disney Channel and some of those things because I didn't want my kids to see it.
Huh. Yeah, right. Because at some point,
it probably wasn't a great venue for us to advertise on.
Also not your market.
But,
yeah.
But there was this element of like, hey, like let's try to give a little buffer between the two. And it seemed to work. And it was like when I was in my own community, like, yeah, people recognize me, but they became kind of used to it, right? Mm-hmm. Like I go to the grocery store just like everybody else, but it wasn't like a thing to go to the grocery store. It was fine.
Yeah.
You know, I sometimes would forget, like more so when I was in other cities or when I was traveling and doing things like that. And you kind of like people would recognize me. And I was like, I forget that people aren't used to seeing me. So then it's just this kind of this thing.
Yeah.
And you have to be ready and prepared. And I think, you know, kind of being able to, you know, talk to people and, you know, kind of understand that you're in the public realm and they're going to see you as the spokesperson, you've got to be prepared for that.
Yeah. I'm curious what might have been a really challenging, either specific experience or lesson or something from that time as you're adjusting to that, because, it, you know, Angie's List is a very household name company. I mean, people know it. And obviously, even if you're in the advertising, it gets detached to the point where some people don't realize that there is an Angie, but a lot of people knew you and they knew who, and so they recognized you, and yet you're waking up every day looking through the same set of eyes you had, you know, the whole life. So, you know, you don't wake up thinking, I am Angie of Angie's List and I am to be right. Like, yeah. So what were the lessons or what were the adjustments that you had to make as that took on a life of its own?
Yeah. I mean, I think when I thought about it, I was like, and I would tell the team this as well, is I have the luxury of being able to talk to all of our customers because they feel like they can come and, you know, that they'll come and talk to me in person, right? Like they'll see me out and about. I'm like, I can collect all kinds of feedback, and I viewed it was a privilege. I needed to treat it as such. So like taking the time and being gracious and talking about the things, because A, it makes the business better. I mean, I still spend a lot of time talking to our customers because I think kind of one-on-one conversations are incredibly valuable and we don't do enough of them. So mm-hmm. I was like, I get this petri dish of experience that I get to like, I get to go in, out to dinner and run into someone that gives me feedback. How do I use that feedback? So I would be good at that. But then I'd also think about things, you know, I kind of back to your point, like I used to always like, my favorite vacation spot when my kids were young was going to Disney World. And the reason I loved going to Disney World is because it was so darn, there was so many things. People were so overstimulated when they were there.
They couldn't possibly notice you.
They didn't notice. It was fantastic. I was like, okay, this is great. You know, I'm like, I was always exhausted when I came home from vacation, but there was just an element of like being able to just be you in your own realm where you're just kind of flying under the radar. And I usually found that was a place I could do that.
Mm. To the first point of telling your team, look, I'm the person who's able to interface with the audience. I think in a way what you were doing there, saying this as a hypothesis, you tell me, I think in a way what you were doing there is you were identifying the utility of this, because there's another way of thinking about it, which is you let it get to your head. I'm a celebrity now. But instead, what you seem to be internalizing and then also sharing with others was, this is a business function and I'm going to kind of see it as a business function and let's all treat it as a business function. The reason to draw attention to me is because it helps humanize the brand and because I'm the person people will talk to, and I can then kind of bring those insights into the company. And if we can contain it in that box and focus on it, then it almost gives the whole weird thing a purpose.
Yeah. Which for the kind of introvert in me, it kind of gives it a job and a purpose. And it's like, it's analytical. I'm like, I'm learning a ton. It helped that for sure. And I've actually institutionalized this kind of process. So, you know, now whether it's walking down the street and running into someone who gives me feedback, I actually do office hours with our customers. So pros can sign up. Anybody can sign up for a 15-minute slot. We'll talk about anything you want to talk about. We can talk
one-on-one.
About feedback on Angie to kind of how to grow their business, you name it. And, you know, I found that those are incredibly valuable to kind of us as an organization to learn. It creates an incredible cultural moment as well. Having a level of accessibility where you're like, yeah, you can talk to Angie. Sure, talk to Angie. It kind of solves problems lower in the organization too, right? Because like, it's not like I'm willing to stand right beside you. I will take this challenge if I need, you know, if we need to, that's fine. I'm good with that. We'll learn from it and we'll figure it out. And the customers appreciate it, you know, because like when, you know, we're working with small businesses and they're, you know, they're trying to, you know, they're wearing many hats, trying to grow a business. I can totally relate, you know, but they don't have time to do everything. And, you know, if they have a pain point that we can help solve, I want to hear about it.
What's the back end of that? Like how much time are you setting aside? Do you have a blocked calendar for these one-on-ones? Do you have like a process for then logging what people say or what people ask about? Like what is the infrastructure of this offer?
I have to admit it's a relatively low-tech thing. I started it kind of like, sometimes I just do things on my own. Like, you know, it's like, I think I can just do this and I don't want to kind of derail the whole organization. So I'm going to do this and I'll start collecting the feedback and we'll figure it out. So I do it with, we promote it through through our newsletter to pros. So I work with the marketing department on that. I've got one person for operations that sits in on those calls with me just because they're going to be better at follow-up than I am. Let's be honest. So we'll kind of walk through what the situation is. You know, they can sign up, take the 15 minutes. I block out a certain amount of time each week to do these. And then, you know, then the team goes and follows up and then we kind of aggregate kind of content up. Cause I'm like, I figure if I'm getting one or two similar comments, then it's probably something worth us talking about because there's probably a lot of comments like that coming in.
Yeah. Yeah. You take me briefly through to orient us. There was a time where you had stepped back from being a public face of the brand and then returned. Tell me about those two decisions.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's like, I always told the team, you know, it's like, hey, the brand, you know, like using me as the key spokesperson can be good for the brand. It could also be limiting for the brand, right? There's only, you know, back to the, it has to be my authentic self. So therefore they don't have a lot of room to be super creative in how they think about their campaigns and things like that. You know, it was the right time for us to think about the brand, you know, kind of standing independently. You know, we always had this, but it was like, hey, let's see how we can evolve the brand and continue to build it out. And, you know, so we ran, gosh, I mean, it was probably 4 or 5 years that I was probably not doing, you know, I certainly wasn't front and center, but I was doing a lot of these other things that we were talking about, talking to customers and doing things like that. And then about a year or so ago, I guess it was, I stepped back into, so you could probably see me now out on, you know, TV commercials and some things like that. You know, and it's one of those where, you know, it's the brand is probably old enough. And I was so entwined with the brand that there's value periodically kind of bringing us back to our roots and kind of making that connection. You know, it may not be the campaigns of 2020 or 2012 when I was like, in absolutely everything. There's always life in moderation. But I think there's value in kind of sprinkling it in.
Yeah. What would you advise founders who are grappling with whether and how to be the face of their brand? As you look back on your own and I'll say, you're like, you know, you're operating at a level that most founders aren't necessarily going to do. They may not have ever have the finances for a national ad campaigns and so on.
but they still have to be the face of their brand on their own Instagram channels. And they still have to be the face of the brand when they go out and talk on podcasts. And a lot of them just don't know how to do that, or they're not that comfortable with it. And I'm sure a lot of them ask you for advice.
Yeah. So I think, you know, one is, you know, kind of think about and understand the fact that you are playing a public role, you know, so kind of like, you know, kind of evaluate kind of that full self and decide, to your point, which parts you're going to share and which parts you're going to kind of have over to the side. I think that's important. And then kind of understand what people want to hear about the story and what topics resonate with them to hear from you. You know, it shouldn't turn into, you know, so it's, you know, I spend a lot of time giving homeowners advice on hiring contractors or, you know, kind of being a homeowner. I mean, I've been a homeowner for, you know, 25 years or something like that. I don't know. You know, it's like, you know, what are your talking points and kind of stick with them? I think when you can kind of keep your messages tighter, it's going to resonate better, especially, you know, across your, you know, repetition and kind of, you know, across your platform will be valuable. If you start to kind of want to talk about anything and everything, then all of a sudden it's kind of like, so what are they standing for? What is the purpose and how does that relate to the brand? You know, so there's just always this balance of kind of making sure, balancing your personal brand with the company brand.
How do you do that without being bored? To say the same things over and over again and talk about the same stuff over and over again, in a way, it is good. Not in a way, it is. It just is good business. It is good business. I've talked to Donald Miller.
Tom's people would tell you to stay on your talking board, right?
Yeah, right. And but also marketing people will, right? Like Donald Miller, who's a friend who wrote Building a Story Brand, the kind of classic book about how to tell your brand story. He just emphasizes over and over again, like, just be on repeat. Just find the right lines and say them over and over and over again. And in a way, what you're doing is just pounding the pavement. You're just sharing that message. You figured out the message that's right for your brand. And you're going to say it over and over again. But it's easy for a brand to do that, right? If I'm just running marketing at Coca-Cola, then we just find a million ways to talk about happiness and we automate it. We just send it out into the world. But you're a human being and people want to talk to you because you are Angie of the brand name, but they're also very curious about you because you're also like Angie, a living and breathing person. So how do you maintain that focus, keep it, and not get deathly bored of it?
Yeah, I think it can be both. Even like, I think about like being at a business for 30 years too, which is what I've been. It's like, it's kind of like, how do you keep things fresh and how do you reinvent yourself along the way? Cause I think they kind of go hand in hand. The messaging is one element of it, but like, you know, how are you learning new things? How are you kind of thinking about things from a different perspective? And you have to think about your messaging the same way. I mean, I might be talking about, you know, kind of starting a business. And maybe I've told that story, you know, 1,000 times, but how am I making it different and unique so it can be intriguing and relevant? How am I introducing new stories or new experiences into that story that makes it fresh? Because you don't want to come across as flat and dull when you're telling the story. You want to kind of have a new tidbit that you've got or you've learned along the way. So, you know, how do you think about that and build time into kind of finding those new angles to put into it to freshen up the story? Because you're right, it can get boring. And it's, you know, not that it's like, you know, it's like, how did you start Angie's List? Well, let me tell you how I started Angie's List. So let me tell you a little different angle on how I started Angie's List, right? Then, you know, let me tell you a little different story here to go along with it, or let me give you a different takeaway from it. So it's about having enough facets to the story in order to kind of interchange them to keep it fresh.
It is identifying the right outcomes and then discovering new and fresh ways to get there. It reminds me of a line I use in various contexts is, people don't like new things. What they like is better versions of old things. Yeah. And in a way, that's what you're doing, right? You know the old thing that works, that has been refined, you have seen the outcome of it.
And so it's just about figuring out what's the consistently better way to do that old thing.
How does it relate to people today? How does it, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like, how do you, you know, the homeowner today is not the homeowner from 30 years ago. Like, what's different? How do we talk to them? How do we think about it? How do we tell the story differently?
Yeah. Angie, this has been so fun. Final thing I'm just curious about is, I'll tell you, I, as a person who has developed some amount of public awareness, though not at the level that you have, I noticed a very interesting thing, which is that once I reached a point where people started talking about me publicly, it's just say on LinkedIn, like, I read this thing that Jason Pfeiffer wrote or something, just like kind of referencing me. And that thing that I wrote came out of that character that I'm playing, you know, and I started to notice an interesting but kind of pleasant detachment from it, where I would see people talk about me, but it didn't feel like they were talking about me. It felt like they were talking about a thing I built. It was not me exactly.
Right.
And I wonder, having done this for so long, what your relationship is like to your own name and to people and to the way in which people understand you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, I mean, it's even funny today, you know, now that we've shortened the name from Angie's List to Angie minus the E, you know, like even in meetings, people will clarify like, no, I didn't mean Angie with an E. I meant, you know, the brand, you know, it's like, it's an important thing to kind of, you know, kind of keep that balance in that distance from the two. I'm like, I have an incredible amount of pride and respect for what's been built. I know that I was one part of that. Right. It's like, it wouldn't be what it is today without all of the other people that have been a part of building that business and kind of helping shape it to what it is. You know, it's like, how do you make sure as an entrepreneur, you're bringing in people that can balance you and can bring in skill sets you don't have? There's lots of skill sets that I lack. And, you know, and I think that's what helps you to kind of keep that perspective and that balance, is that it's actually something bigger than you. You know, but, you know, to the question of the name itself, you know, I think I've been involved long enough that it's kind of like, there is just this natural kind of space. I'm like, you know, it's bigger. It's bigger than what, you know, it's bigger than just kind of like something I'm keeping on paper over here. That's mine. It's actually a system and a process and a bigger thing.
Yeah. Well, Angie with an E of Angie without the E. Thanks for chatting with me about this. It's been so fun.
Thanks, Jason.
And that's our episode. I would love to hear what you think, and maybe even about a problem that you solved. You can find me at my website, jasonpfeiffer.com. JasonPfeiffer.com. Also, I have some more useful stuff for you. I write a newsletter about how to future-proof yourself and become more adaptable and optimistic. I would love for you to sign up. It is at jasonpfeiffer.bulletin.com. Also, check out my other podcast. It's called Build for Tomorrow. In each episode, I take on some belief that we have that holds us back from progress and show you why it is not as bad as you think. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media and comes out every Monday morning, so make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss an episode. Thanks to Deepa Shah for production. My name is Jason Pfeiffer. See you next week.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. On Face Off, the U.S. versus China, we'll explore what's critical to this important global relationship. Trump and Xi Jinping, AI, TikTok, and even Hollywood. New episodes of Face Off are available now, wherever you get your podcasts.